Beets are a great source of nitric oxide, and you can get the benefits of 3 whole beets in just 1 teaspoon of Super Beets without the beet taste. No fuss, no muss. It's a great way to get your nitric oxide in your bloodstream elevated. Call 800-738-2198 or go to intelligentbeets.com. That's 800-738-2198. Welcome to the Intelligent Medicine Podcast. I'm your host, Dr. Ronald Hoffman, and I think we have a very, very fascinating subject in store for you today. We're going to take a look at dental health, but not in the way that we traditionally handle it. You know, we talk about teeth and the mouth's relationship to systemic illness. Indeed, we are going to relate the mouth to systemic illness, but in a way that perhaps you have not thought of before. I think this is a very, very innovative approach that needs more exposure. More and more people need to know about the connection between dental issues and sleep issues, which then have pervasive impact on health. And a true pioneer in this area is today's guest. He's Dr. Howard Hinden. And I've invited him here partly because he has asked me to speak at an upcoming conference of the AAPMD, which is an organization devoted to promoting awareness of the relationship between airway issues and sleep problems and other types of health issues. And we're going to go into this in depth. Dr. Hinden is a dentist par excellence, but he goes way beyond usual dentistry. He has an interest in challenging issues like TMJ joint disorders, temporomandibular joint problems, craniofacial pain, but also he's done some really fabulous innovative work relating dental malocclusion, the way that we bite, the way that the mouth is shaped, and the way that we breathe, and the impact that it has on our entire well-being. And he is also one of the founders. Actually, you are the founder of the Foundation for Airway Health. Is that correct?
Yes, Ron.
Okay, indeed. So, and we'll tell you what that's all about, because this goes way beyond teeth and TMJ. We're talking about airway health, and of course, the airway is the key to our nervous system and our overall well-being, as we'll soon find out. Dr. Hinden also has an active practice in Suffern, New York. He is my personal dentist, so I often go up to him, well, as little as I can. I try to stay away, but from time to time I have recourse to his services. He is an excellent dentist. He practices in conjunction with a team of dentists, including his son, Dr. Jeffrey Hinden, who's also a pioneer in this research, looking at the relationship between the mouth and breathing and the entire gamut of nervous system problems that impact our health and sleep. So without further ado, welcome. It's a pleasure having you on the program, Howie.
It's great being on the program, Ron.
So, okay, so frame the issue for us. So why this emphasis? Why did your career take this turn in this direction?
As you know, I am now going on almost 50 years of being a dentist, and this is one of the most exciting things that I've ever been involved in. What dentistry is now beginning to be involved in treating sleep, but it's much more than sleep. It has to do with the airway, because if we're not breathing well at night, we're not going to be breathing well during the day. And having a restricted airway and not being able to breathe well has a huge impact on everything we do, because we compensate and we make because breathing is the most essential number one physiological function that we have. If our brain says the choice between breathing or pain, I'll take the pain. So a lot of people make postural adjustments, they make jaw adjustments, they make adjustments so that they will breathe okay, and the pain is an expression of their airway problem, but the airway problem is not treated, the expression is treated. So often patients are given pain medication for pain, and the interesting thing is almost every pain medication is a respiratory depressant. So you can imagine what happens. It's just a downward spiral. The worse you sleep, the more pain you have, the more medication you get, the worse you sleep. It's the same thing with obesity. If you don't sleep well, it affects your leptin receptors, and obviously you know a lot more about that than I do, but it changes the way we believe we feel that we feel we want to eat more when we're really full. And if you're sleepy during the day, you're going to crave carbohydrates, because at some point during the day, your brain will say, give me carbohydrates or I'm not going to get through the day. So it impacts on all aspects of the life, and we're particularly concerned about the effect of this on children.
Right, so often we see kids now who are being treated for attention deficit disorder. They can't focus, they can't concentrate in school, they're given powerful medications to alleviate their attention problems. And I think a real revolutionary breakthrough in our understanding of childhood ADD is that in many cases it's related to sleep problems, which can be connected to breathing problems, correct?
Correct.
And we've only become aware of this in the past decade or so.
Absolutely. And one of the reasons we started this organization is we realized that a lot of the people we're seeing with adult problems, they were there when they were children. Not only health problems, but learning problems in school, ADD. And there is some great research. Karen Bonnick, who's an epidemiologist at Albert Einstein, I think that's a school that you, medical school you went to, Ron?
Yes, indeed. I guess that...
she's an epidemiologist. She did a study, a cohort study, 11,500 children that they followed over a number of years. And that's a huge number. That's not a small study. That's a huge study. And they found that children who have sleep problems as early as a year are twice as likely, more than twice as likely, to have a behavior and a learning problem by the time they get to school and are age 7. So the way that the brain takes all the data and the learning, and the brain of a child is absorbing so much information so quickly, and at night when they sleep, if they're sleeping well, they're able to put it into context and learn how to use that data. And if they're not doing that during those formative years, by the time they get to school, they're going to be a little bit behind in speech and in reading, and they're going to have a problem. Dr. Stephen Sheldon, who's the director of pediatric sleep medicine at Lurie's Children's Hospital, Northwestern University in Chicago, and a member of our AAPMD board, believes that up to 80% of children with ADD or ADHD really have a sleep problem of one kind or another. And he says, his quote is, every single sleepy child should have a sleep screening, not necessarily a sleep test, but a sleep screening.
And what does that entail, a sleep screening? I mean, because I just saw a patient who told me, and I sent her for a sleep screening because she has some real profound sleep problems. I also suggested that she go see you. Incidentally, you may be seeing her soon. But she said that her 10-year-old went to a sleep lab at a major medical center in New York City, had all kinds of wires and electrodes applied to his head, and they observed him while he slept, and they found out that he had an airway problem. He actually had enlarged adenoids. And the treatment, is a little simplistic. Well, they take out your tonsils and adenoids. Is that a complete fix?
Yeah, when you think about it, that there's only two ways we take in air, through our nose and through our mouth. And anything that narrows that opening, and in a young child, it's tonsils and adenoids would be the primary thing to look at. But when I say sleep screening, not everybody needs to go through that the overnight test. For a child, that's very difficult, if you can imagine. Anybody who's had a sleep overnight sleep test, you just hooked up with so many wires. And the question always comes up, is this the same as sleeping at home? Are you really getting a picture of what a normal night's sleep is? But sleep screening is just to look at certain basics. What's the behavior during sleep? Does the child make noises? Is there a lot of irritability towards sitting around? Is the child a mouth breather? Does he sleep with his mouth open? Does he make grunting sounds? Children don't snore like adults snore. It's a different type of sound. So a pediatrician ideally should look for it, or a dentist or a pediatric dentist would be a person who could look for it. And if you see enough of those signs, then it would be good to follow up with a pediatric sleep specialist. And sleep disorders in a child are different than in an adult. An adult, for example, obstructive sleep apnea, you measure the number of times a person stops breathing for 10 seconds or more, and that's one event. So more than five events is considered sleep apnea. Five events in an hour is sleep apnea in an adult. Mild, 15 to 30 is moderate, and above 30 is severe sleep apnea. In a child, it's one event.
Wow. So this is a much lower threshold for children.
Right, and so what happens often, even in an overnight study, you could have a child have a study, and a lot of these events that occur will occur at the end of the evening and in REM sleep. But by that time of the evening, when the child has been hooked up to all this equipment for so long, he gets a little fussy. He doesn't want to sleep. The parents said, it's enough. We've seen enough. And they might miss that event. So what the belief is, if the clinical picture doesn't match the test, go with the clinical picture.
Oh, so you're saying treat as if, or is there an alternative way to treat? Because I know that you have diagnostic methods that you use in your office that are quite innovative.
See, one of the reasons we formed this organization is that because this is a complex problem that requires a multidisciplinary approach, what usually happens, first of all, it's missed and they don't pick up the sleep problem. And secondly, whatever office you go to, if you go to an ENT doctor, he knows a throat doctor, they may recommend removing tonsils.
Right.
Adenoids.
Right.
If you go to a pediatric dentist, well, your mouth is too narrow and small, do some expansion.
We'll do some orthodontics.
Or if you go to an allergist, well, the reason that the airway is restricted is because there's chronic inflammation due to some allergen, that let's treat the allergen.
We'll give you Singulair and a nasal steroid or something like that.
Yeah, or there could be a nutritional problem. There could be lactose intolerance. It could be some food that was introduced that could be a problem. So sorting this out isn't easy, but we propose that it should be done from the beginning, not go to one practitioner, and when that practitioner has exhausted everything and the patient isn't getting well, then they move on to the next one. So wouldn't it be nice if practitioners of different modalities could at least have a sense of what other people do and then put on their thinking cap from the very beginning and say, all right, who do I need to involve in the care of this particular child or adult?
And, you know, as you say, the sleep problems in children may be different qualitatively and quantitatively from sleep problems in adults. In children, the symptoms may be inattention, fatigue, ADD. And in adults, the symptoms may be very, very profound. They may be chronic anxiety. They may be overweight because of sleep deficits producing insulin resistance. Actually, we'll be talking about this in my lecture on March 27th at your conference on the relationship between nutrition and sleep. And it's a two-way street. It's like sleep influences nutrition. You don't get enough sleep, you want to eat more. But nutrition can have an impact on sleep. The right kind of nutrition can help deepen your sleep.
Well, in children who are sleepy eat poorly. You know, the interesting thing is, what is the drug what was the original drug for children with medication for children with ADD? It's Ritalin.
Speed.
And let's see, like, so now you're taking somebody who's hyperactive, and you give them an upper. Like, why would that work? And the reason may be is because it takes away the sleepiness.
Okay.
And it calms them down. So what else would take away the sleepiness? Sugar.
Okay, it's like a quick high.
A quick high, and so what happens is these sleepy children are going to crave carbohydrates, are going to crave sugar, and now they move down the path to obesity. And so a sleep problem coupled with a nutritional problem is like a perfect storm.
And So what? Talk about the gamut of problems that occur. I mean, in adult sleep apnea, you know, this is something that I look for in my adult patients because I'll give you an anecdote. I had a patient once who baffled me because he had very high blood pressure, and you know, we went through the usual things, and he was lean. He exercised a lot. We put him on a superb diet. We gave him a wide variety of supplements that help blood pressure. I asked, did he exercise? And he was a tremendous exerciser. He really was outstanding. Athlete, and yet he had profound high blood pressure. And one day he was in the office, and I was kind of, you know, paused, and he was with his wife, and I looked at her and I said, does he snore? And she rolled her eyes and she said, does he snore? Wow, does he snore? And it was like, okay, let's go for a sleep study. He had profound sleep apnea. And what does that do to the body when you have these dramatic pauses in breathing?
You know, they talk about the comorbidities of things that occur with sleep apnea. So the common comorbidities are blood pressure, cardiac arrhythmias, GERD. And insulin resistance or type 2 diabetes. So these are all, if you add those up, these are the most common chronic illnesses that are treated. And the two paths you can take are either go for a more conventional approach where you'll be managed with medication for these problems, or a more integrated approach like you do, try and look at other things and the nutritional aspect. But the part that often is missed, and because patients don't think it relates to the problem, is how they sleep. Because aside from having apnea where you stop breathing, even if you don't stop breathing, your sympathetic nervous system, you could be hypervigilant, and you never really get good sleep. So you may not be measurably have sleep apnea, but your nervous system is working as if you did.
Right. So I want to emphasize that point because I think that's a really important take-home message, is that if you have sleep apnea, actually, you know, the scariest thing in the world, scarier than the IRS, scarier than, you know, a saber-toothed tiger in our, you know, in a primordial forest where we evolved, scarier than starvation, scarier than your mother-in-law, is an inability to breathe and suffocation. And if you have the experience of suffocation at night, chronically, day in and day out, it's almost as if you are in a constant state of vigilance, sympathetic overload, you're adrenalized, and you produce a lot of cortisol, which is a stress hormone, and these have profound, you raise your blood pressure, speeds your heart rate, makes you more insulin resistant, and has a very damaging effect on your nervous system, your brain, your whole body, right?
And to add to that, the other thing that happens is it changes the way, because you think you're under attack, in which you really are, you release more of the inflammatory proteins, the cytokines.
Mm-hmm.
And so you will overreact to whatever comes along. So a person like that will experience more pain than somebody who's not in that state. They will overreact to things. In a dental office, these are the patients who, a dentist does something that's sort of a minor procedure, and the patient said, my tooth is sensitive, it just doesn't go away, because they are coming in with a hyperactive nervous system. They're like the person who is waiting for the saber-toothed tiger to jump out from behind the tree.
Mm-hmm. Right. So this gets into autonomic nervous system, which is a concept that we supposedly all learned in high school or at least college. You know, the two divisions of the autonomic nervous system, and you actually are a pioneer, and your son Jeffrey's really a pioneer in measuring people's autonomic nervous system responses. You have very fancy apparatus to gauge that, and you can actually monitor the response of people to your therapies. Looking at those reactions.
Yes. Oh, so since the last time we had an opportunity to speak, one of the things that we're doing is my son Jeff has created this software where we actually take a bite, or we take relationship of the jaw, whether we're making a dental orthotic or an appliance for sleep or for TMJ or for even for athletic performance. Instead of doing it by some subjective measurement, we do it according to physiological parameters, looking to find the place where the heart rate and the respiration rate is at the best point. And that's, we capture that point, and then we fabricate our dental appliances to that position. And the reality is that when somebody is that position, they are breathing the easiest.
Yeah, and that's interesting because, in an ordinary dental office, they'll say, how does it feel? It's like, it feels good. Yeah, I'm comfortable. But that's not enough. You might need some objective criteria to judge whether this is having the jaw malalignment is being corrected. That's all very technical for me, but this is what you live and breathe. The correction that you are applying through some kind of dental appliance that you might give it, that it actually is change. It's relaxing them. It's helping to slow their heart rate. It's reducing their all the signs of a sympathetic overload.
Right. Whether they teach Lamaze or mindful meditation, it's all about slowing your breathing down, breathing slower and deeper, and when you get to that point, everything feels better. Pain really goes away because you're really moving from a more sympathetic or adrenaline state to a calmer parasympathetic, which is like the yin yang. It's the yin of the yin and yang state.
Okay. Well, this is a suitable place at which to pause because you've introduced a wide variety of subjects that are of interest to our audience. We're talking about the airway and the relationship of the airway to a wide variety of maladies ranging from childhood inattention, ADD, ADHD, to adult problems, metabolic problems, nervous system problems, pain, fibromyalgia. The group is called the Foundation for Airway Health. They've got a conference upcoming in New York on March 27th. I'll be participating in that conference along with health professionals and our guest, Dr. Hinden. And for health professionals, you can get information at aapmd.org. Is that correct?
That's correct.
And for the general public, it's www.foundationforairwayhealth.org. And we'll talk a little bit about the role for the public in advocacy, because we want a Million Mom March to increase awareness about these types of problems, because kids who suffer from these conditions often don't get proper treatment. We'll continue on that theme in part two. Our guest, Dr. Howard Hinden. I'm Dr. Ronald Hoffman, and this is the Intelligent Medicine Podcast.